Good morning, everyone. I was really thrilled to be invited to this gathering this morning because I think there is spaces like this are deeply missing from the Christian community, where we are going to critique what we believe, but also look at other beliefs that are out there, but to be informed about how can we have some meaningful dialogue with people. I think gone are the days where you stand in the street corner and tell people they're going to hell. It's a relational time that we're in, and people want to have life together in terms of food and discussions and build relationship to get to the heart of what you believe, why you believe what you believe. I also deeply believe that there are many Christians who lack the confidence in their faith, in the authority of scriptures, and in the ability to share Jesus comfortably wherever they are. Now, I want to spend some time just talking about this issue called black consciousness. And I'm here because I'm going to talk about what was it that made me turn from Rastafarianism to Christianity. It's interesting because the whole issue about black consciousness, it's like a dirty word, particularly in the black church. It's very uncomfortable when we think about the white church as well, when we talk anything about black consciousness. People usually get very uncomfortable. But the whole notion about black consciousness, it is about identity. Who am I? Okay? It is about that big question, who am I? Now, I've had that question answered for me over 40 years ago. I'm a son of God. But I'm also, I'm black. My forefathers were taken from Africa. I'm part of that Atlantic Triangle. My mother birthed me in a country called Antigua. And God, by his power, miraculously brought me here to England to be a vessel of his. So I've come to grips and terms with my identity, my history, both spiritually and historically and culturally as well. I go to Ghana a bit. I've been going to Ghana for over 30 odd years. And when I go there, I take people to Elmina Castle, Cape Coast Castle. Whenever I go to the Caribbean, I'm always looking for history, always, because it informs me. It helps me to get into perspective that God was at work in Egypt back in the Bible as he was at work through the whole Atlantic slavery, okay? It's not something I'm afraid of. It's something I relish and I enjoy. It was Marcus Garvey who said that a nation who do not know their history, they are like a tree without a root, okay? And it's important that we get hold of that. Now, it was interesting because I was baptized and confirmed in the Methodist Church. I was baptized and christened in the Methodist Church. And it was really interesting because when I came to this country, I went to church. And as a young kid, six and a half, seven, as I went to church and sat on those hard pews, I believe the only thing I got from those hard pews were woodworm in my posterior because they were so hard. The service was just over an hour, but I found it incredibly boring. Why did I find it boring and irrelevant? Because when I came to this country, I discovered for the very first time I was black. I didn't know it before. I discovered I was black. Why? Because when I went to school, someone called me a nigger. Someone called me a black bastard. Someone called me a gollywog. You know, they just did that. Now, just imagine 6, 7 years of age and, you know, you go to school and you're made to realize that you are different. That's painful. You remember that old, that song that we used to, nursery rhyme, sticks and stones could break my bones, but words cannot harm me. That's a lie. We are more vulnerable in those years than any other part of our lives. So you can imagine, I came home and our meeting, and we're having our dinner, and I said, hey, they called me a nigger. What's a nigger? It was tough, it was difficult. And then when I went to school, a couple of boys, four white guys came to beat me up, and the teacher on playground duty held me while they punched and kicked me. And when I went home and said to my mom, this way, she said, no, you must have been naughty. Because my parents were of a completely different generation. Teachers were the tops of the tops, so I must have been naughty. And then when I went to church, I looked up and I saw this image of Jesus, who was white, you know, blonde hair, blue eye, long nightie, manicured toenails, and he looks like the people who hate me, call me niggers. Come on. In church, I was 8 and 9, and I had these questions in my mind. How come the Jesus I worship looks like the people who hate me? It was tough for me. So no doubt, 8 and 9 years of age, by the time I was in my teens, forget church, forget Jesus. At the same time, we were, you know, thinking and being hit with Black Power, Black Panther, Malcolm X, Angela Davis, Elgin Cleaver, all of these guys. So you can imagine, and I remember as a young kid, you know, had my BlackBerry on, had my black fist. You know, I remember standing like this, ready to fight, singing two kinds of songs, get up, stand up, stand up for your right, but also singing, repatriation is a must now, now, back Jah, we're on the right side. Selassie say he's going to take us home now, now. Come on. You see, so for me as a young kid, these were issues that I've been wrestling with as a teenager, and church did not have an answer for me. So when church didn't have an answer, I was looking for an answer. And as I looked outside of the context of church, I found people who were saying, listen, be proud of your blackness. Be proud of who you are. Hold your head up high. And they were affirming me as a person of history, but of dignity and respect. And what does that do to me? It helps me. It gave me confidence. It gave me hope. And it was interesting because my mother was a good Christian and she would pray for me. And I used to say to her, listen, man, sure, mom, you'll give your money to a white man. You'll give your money to church. Let go of that. I couldn't get my head around. She was giving her money to church. And we were there as kids. I couldn't really understand that. But she prayed for me. And it was interesting because I spent years just going around talking to people, talking about not just only we're going to live in Africa, not just only about dignity, but seeking to empower people to understand that there's hope. And it was interesting because I related more to the Old Testament, the Egypt time of Israel. I related that to that. The traveler journeys, I related to that. But I had a blockage when it came to Jesus because, you know, the European Christians, you know, made this Jesus out as white, you know, white European-centric Jesus. And it created a blockage in my mind. And we've got to realize as Christians that we've got to portray a Jesus, not a European-centric Jesus, but a Jesus that actually, from the East, actually a Jesus that is not white, blonde hair, blue eye, manicure, toenail, but it's a Jesus that looks completely different from what we've been portraying. And we've got to be open to have these discussions that the narratives of the Bible is not around a specific race of European people. And unless we're willing to open those discussions and have a look at it, we're going to have problems. So you can imagine me telling my mom, hey, mom, you know, you got a picture of Jesus and how come Judas look a bit dark from everybody else? All the good guys look white, you know? And the guy who was the bad guy look a bit darker. Those things matter. We've got to also open the discussion and debate and talk about how, you know, people from Africa had influence in theology. We've got to bring that back, because those are things that are important. We are affirming people and saying to people, actually, listen, whether you're from Africa or later on from Europe, you know, theology and the Bible, our theology today was shaped by men and women, not just Europeans. It was shaped by men and women from right across the context of the world. And so for me, Rastafarian appealed to me. You know why it appealed to me? Because it said to me, hey, listen, you're black and, you know, you're part of the Old Testament journey. You're part of that. You're in a struggle. You've been in Egypt. Egypt have had you enslaved, but don't worry, God's going to raise up a deliverer. I identified with that. But it also tells me that, look at yourself, you know, be proud of who you are. You're a Nazirite. And so my long locks was about Numbers chapter 6. My long locks was about an identity in Old Testament teaching that I've made a covenant with God. And so it was really important for me just to understand that, hey, I was there. My history is rooted in the Bible as well. I've got a stake in the Bible. And the God of the Bible identify with my suffering, identify with, you know, what I'm going through, identify with the oppression, identify with the racism and the prejudice and the marginalization. And it was interesting because where did that come from? Some of you would have heard about a guy called Marcus Garvey. And it was interesting, here was Marcus Garvey, again, a guy who was brought up in the church, had the history of the church, but, you know, he recognizes that, you know, the church, particularly the upper class of the church, wasn't really dealing with the oppression of the people, the poor and the weak and the marginalized. And he recognizes that there were people using the Bible to keep people down. So there was a narrative that says that the sword, the gun, and the Bible all traveled on the same ship. And we've got to remember that, you know, there were people who confused people, that made people angry and resentful about the Bible and Jesus. But as we read the Bible, we see that there is a purpose, there's a will. And so Marcus Garvey gets on, he says, hey, first of all, you're black. You should be proud of it. You're beautiful. And you're made in the image of God. And then he says, there's hope. So he gives a prophetic word that out of Africa, because you see, he was fed up of looking to the West. Out of Africa will come forth a redeemer, someone who's going to set you free. And guess what happened? In the 1930s, Emperor Haile Selassie was crowned King of Kings and Lord of Lords and conquering line of the tribe of Judah. Where is that? In Revelation. And so people began to worship him. And he was a guy with aspiration and a vision to say, hey, listen, I recognize that our people have suffered. We're going to give them something about consciousness. And let me just tell you something. The whole issue about being black and being conscious, once you are a minority anywhere, you've got to deal with the issue of identity. Anywhere. And this guy did something that was phenomenal in terms of setting the trend that influences guys like Kwame Nkrumah. Many of those guys in Kwame Nkrumah, Joshua Nkrumah, and all those guys, those leaders that we know in the past, he influenced them in terms of an African, a Pan-African nation. And what he was saying, that listen, you're important, you are part of the plan of God, and you've got your own destiny. Now, I think for me, what is significant about today is this. We're having a discussion today about roots. Now, I'm a Christian. I tell people the most significant thing that's ever happened in my life is meeting Jesus. And when I see Jesus, I don't see him as blonde hair, blue eye. I see him looking like me. Come on. That's how I see Jesus. He looks like me. I am a son of God. I was made in his image. And we need to understand that all of us need, when we see Jesus, don't get excited or get bad and uncomfortable when someone says they see Jesus like you. So I meet people say, hey man, I've got locks and I look like Jesus. Hey brother, as long as you're living a holy life, a pure life, and you love Jesus and you're salt of the earth, hey, no problem. Because at the end of the day, it's not much about our exterior. Because we're going to leave that here. But identity says in a holistic way, body, soul, and spirit, that I could identify with Jesus in my context, culturally, in my thinking, theologically, and in my experience, historically. Unless we're willing to deal with those issues, people are going to be angry, they're going to be confused, and they're going to feel insecure. Unless we're willing to deal with that. And the whole notion of identity and culture, there is a tension in the Bible. There's always been, because they're human beings. There is. New Testament. Hey, Peter, what were you doing with those Gentiles down there? There's tension. There's racial tension. You read the Bible, there's always been racial tension because of human beings. There are always those who feel they're at the top and those at the bottom to serve them. Always been there. But it's not about, you know, whether you feel at the bottom or the top. It's about who you think and believe that you are in Christ Jesus. So when I go before someone, I'm not saying, look at this black man. I'm saying, look at the Son of God first. Because I'm not going to be defined by the color of my skin. The color of my skin doesn't define me. It may define you, help you to define me, but it doesn't. Because I'm, you know, my thinking is bigger than that. But the important thing is that culturally, as I find myself in different contexts, I move according to my cultural experience. So when I go to Ghana, you know, hey, Kojo has come home. When I go to the Caribbean, yeah, Wagwan, man. Okay, it depends. So it's important for us to understand that these are big issues. So in the 60s, it was Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and Black Power, Black Panther. In the 70s was Rastafarianism. Streams of young people. In fact, once upon a time, in the 70s, 80s, you could find young, black, white. You find people in China. You find people in Germany. Right now, I know people in Germany, German guys, who've got dreadlocks, listen to reggae music. And they've got their version of the gospel in reggae, in Rastafarian stuff. China, if you go to Japan now, if you can't speak Japanese, just say, yeah, what, man? And they'll say, yeah, Bob Marley. Yeah, cool, man, cool. Speak Jamaican patois in Japan. You'll get it fine. Okay? And it's interesting because you find that there in the 80s. In the 90s, it was Nation of Islam. 2001 was Radical Islam. Our young people have embraced. Why? Because there's some identity blockages that they have in their mind. There's some experiences that they have that they're saying, please, could somebody help me to clarify who I am? Could somebody help me to find myself in the Bible? Where do I stand with God? How do I live as a man in the midst of the confusion of this world, the prejudice of this world? And black consciousness and consciousness is about understanding who you are and be affirmed in that. If you know who you are, if you're firm in it, you're fine. You have no problem. I know some people don't like me because I'm black. That's not my problem, that's theirs. No problem. I know some people want to close the door on me because I'm black. That's their problem. My God opens doors. My attitude is this: if God is for me, who can be against me? That's my attitude. So I'm at a point in my thinking. I'm at a point in my experience where I'm saying, hey, Jesus, who is the King of Kings, I'm his son. And don't forget, he's gone through rejection. He's gone through persecution. He's gone through everything that I would ever go through. So if anyone understands how it feels to be rejected and isolated, he does. But if anyone understands what it means and feels to be confident in the Father and in his promise, is him as well. So I take my cue from him. So I think we need to continue this discussion. I think there are some big issues out there. And I think that what we need is more teaching. As our sister was just talking about, having confidence, real confidence in the Bible, not just the Bible says. But we need to understand historically. We need to understand how it fits up chronologically. We need to understand, you know, the context in which it was written, so that we could have those intelligent conversations with people, and so that people could ask the right question and you and I could feel confident to give them the right question. Let me just finish like this. When I meet guys, and I meet guys, all kinds of people, and particularly people talk about blackness and they're caught up in this, and I say, hey man, you know, it's good to be black, you know, but there's things bigger than being black. It's good to be black. I'm proud of my blackness. But the world is bigger than just black. It's bigger than being white. It's a massive world. And when I meet people from all cultural walks of life, I realize that Jesus has made us brothers and sisters. It's not about black, it's about a family. It's about a family. My family don't all look like me, speak like me, eat like me, but it's a family. And that's the great thing that we have in terms of Jesus and the Bible. Let me stop there. It says end. Okay, let me stop there.
There are some who struggle with the concept that the Eurocentric view of Christianity is not the only view. How do you assist them with making the shift?
I think for me, it's not just me. I think all of us here in Europe, in England, we've got to look at the fact that when we are teaching and training, that there are other cultural contexts that we need to bring in. And we need to be open with those discussions. 30 years ago, we did a collaborative work with Spurgeon's College. And we had a course called Black Light, where we looked at black spirituality, black presence in the Bible. So people who helped shape our theology, you know, today. And it was interesting that the majority of people who came to those courses were white people. Interesting. I thought there'd be more black people coming, but they didn't come. And largely because, you see, the way colonialism worked, the way slavery worked, was you take down, strip down everything of the person, the ability to confront the truth, the ability to think on these issues and to engage. It makes people, it made the slaves, it made even some of our parents. When, you know, if I went home and said to my mom, Mom, Jesus was black, you know. She said, boy, stop talking foolishness. You understand? One cough in my head. The notion that Jesus, you know, could have been black, it would have been a no-no. And I think what we need to do as the church in the 21st century is to have those discussions where we're saying, actually, come on, let's talk about what color was Jesus? You know, where does some of our theology come from? Whether, you know, St. Augustine of Hippo, you know, Tertullian, where did it come from? Let's talk about these things. And I think if we could do more of that, make people comfortable in terms of having those discussions, then I think people would feel comfortable to come in and really feel comfortable and say, yeah, that's no problem. I know that history. Let's go deeper. So for me, I think it's incumbent on us today as teachers, as theologians, as preachers, to begin to make it a public thing that we're talking about and not something that we are shy, embarrassed, or don't want to talk about.
Brilliant, brilliant. Just something you just touched on just now. Who were some of the black people in the Bible that you could probably just throw out to us?
I mean, it was Jesus, man. No, but you see, it's interesting because people talked, you know, when they talk about the Bible, there's a notion, and that's about Eurocentric. There's a notion that everybody, you know, even this one I was reading about the Greeks that Paul met. You talk about Ethiopian eunuch and thinking about the Ethiopian Coptic church today and those guys. It's just incredible. It's as if we've got to get clear in our minds that, look, when you go, I was in Egypt and seeing the Coptic church guys and how they worship. You go to Ethiopia and you see those guys, you say, wow, you know, these guys are there. They've been doing it for a long time. And so I think that we've got to remind people that Christianity wasn't just based, you know, in Geneva or here in Europe. It has a much wider breadth of history. So until we begin to talk about the outside of Europe business, you will have those kind of myth that's there. So they're there. They're there. It wasn't just Simon of Cyrene, you know, the black guy carrying the cross. Everybody wanted to make you think he's just Simon, you know? And I think sometimes, you know, when I read that text, I said, that's why sometimes some of our Christian, black Christians are kind of wimpish. They believe that you mustn't ask questions. And that's to do with slavery. We mustn't ask questions. If you go and ask your pastor, was Jesus black tomorrow? They say, boy, you backslide. You know, we have this thing that we don't deal with that. Any of you, ask a black pastor, except David Daniel, okay? I think LBC, you know, gave him some theology there. But, you know, just ask and just see the response you get. Just say, are there any possibility that Jesus could have been black? And see the response. I'm just asking, tell them, and see the response.
Interesting point. Last question for you, sir. What might be learned from black consciousness for white working class people who have, by and large, lost their own sense of identity or had it hijacked?
Wow. That's a big one. The church here in England has largely been middle class. In fact, for the last 15, 20 years, I've been beating a drum saying that we have got to really rediscover missions to the working class community. You know, the City Mission guys tried it in Liverpool, in Manchester, in Ireland. And, you know, we had places where City Mission guys were working specifically with those that work in big, in the docks and in big construction, rail construction, etc. But I think that we have got to really rediscover what it means to get into working class, particularly white working class scenarios, and, you know, engage. Because church is largely middle class. And if you're not middle class when you become a Christian, it makes you middle class. Okay? It makes you middle class. That's what church does. It makes you, it's not just the prosperity guys talk about money, but the church actually makes you, you know, think, behave, cut off people, so you don't want to go. So, you know, I go to the pub, right? I go to the pub and meet people, right? And it's interesting because I used to meet some guys and in the pub, and I'm thinking in the pub, I'm there. They say, Les, what would you like? Would you like a pint, Les? Right? I'm thinking, he's a black man, you know. Suppose one of those black deacons who are painters coming to paint this place and find me with a pub, you know, a pint. Brother Isaac backsliding. You know? and it's a cultural thing because for the white working class guy, it's down the pub you're going to engage him. It's down the pub. Now, you may not drink a beer, but you could drink something else, a ginger beer. And, you know, so unless we're willing to get out. So when I meet a guy, yeah, mate, how are you, Les? Yeah, okay, mate. Yeah, mate, you know, you're effing good geezer. That's what they call me. Now, no one in the church has ever called me an effing good geezer, but they do all the time, right? And then say, yeah, mate, yeah, come down. You know, me and my bird, you know, my bird's, you know, she's pregnant now. Les, what can I do, Les? Now, for me, it's to get along, find out what's happening, his bird is his girlfriend, and just have a chat, have a conversation. And I say, hey, would you like to get your, you know, child christened? I'm using the language. Yeah, what should I do? I ain't got a suit, mate, you know? I said, no, rock up. You see, because we've lost touch with these guys, because we don't go to pubs, you know, the Pentecostals. Yeah, some of them, I think some of them go to nightclub now, you know. But we don't go to pubs, so culturally, the blacks have said, and the whites, you know, they're not cutting it with them. So for me, for the white working class, what we've got to do is rediscover intentional mission that's going to say, we're not going to go in as white middle class, but we're going to go in. One of my good friends, he's up in Manchester, brilliant guy, working class guy, working in inner city Manchester. And he said, you know, this guy did his master's, and he struggled to go to university to get his certificate, because he said, Les, I can't deal with all that pomp and sermon. That's like, you know, those guys at the top there. He said he struggled with that. He's a white guy, he's a working class guy, but he's bright, he's brilliant, he's a historian, and yet he struggled. And what he struggled with was the fact of how the church constantly, year after year, decades after decade, haven't really discovered a mission to the poor working class white people. So what we have to do today is to be intentional about it. And part of it is actually thinking about how do we live amongst the white guys. Because even when you think about those guys who are nationalistic and all that, a lot of it's ignorant base. You know, the amount, I went to a youth club once and a guy said to me, suppose I call you a nigger. And I said, well, mate, listen, my reply was, don't take it out of me. Take it out of my mom and dad. Okay, because I could have been born white, you know. And we had a talk after 2 hours later, I was laying hands on praying for them. It's about relationship. People are what they are because they're ignorant. So for me, I know it's a long winded, but get out there. We can only do that by get out there, engaging, identifying with people like Jesus did. Okay?
Brilliant. Let's give him a round of applause.